1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums. I'm Redbeard, and today, in the studio, the historic first flight of the Eagles.
So open up, I'm climbing in, so take it easy.
And I think in particular, Poco and the Flying Burrito Brothers were influences on us because they were right there at the Troubadour. We got to see them play live and watch what they were doing and check out the harmonies and check out the songs that they were writing or the songs that they were doing. So they were big, this big influence.
Peaceful, easy feeling.
It was like we were talking about a little bit about the Eagles, but we were somehow got into it, and he says, "You know, Randy, I don't think we even knew how great it was." And I thought about that, and I said, "You're exactly right. You know, we were too young to even know how good it was. Or, you know, just inexperienced. It was just, it just all happened."
Ooh, ooh, winter woman, she got the moon in her eye.
Hi, this is Randy Meisner.
And I'm Glenn Frey, in the studio for the 1972 debut album from the Eagles.
Down through the history of mankind, first flights are revered. The Montgolfier brothers in Paris in 1783 with their hot air balloon. The Wright brothers with powered flight in 1903 at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. Charles Lindbergh's first transatlantic flight. Yuri Gagarin, first into space in 1961. Alan Shepard, first American to do so. And Apollo 11's Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins, first to land on the moon and back in 1969. And of course, back here on Earth, Dick Rutan and Gina Yeager flew around the world in 1986 without ever landing. In June 1972, when the debut album by an L.A.-based band, The Eagles, was quietly released, it had none of that anticipation, date with destiny, public spectacle that all of the aforementioned events carry. But history proved that their first flight of this original quartet would quickly allow a career to take wing that would result in The Eagles becoming the most popular American band ever. By June 1972, America's rock and roll continental drift had shifted dramatically westward, and it was into this musical migration that rode independently two unheralded young musicians who met up in L.A., singing drummer Don Henley from Texas and singer-guitarist Glenn Frey from Detroit. Here's the late Eagles co-founder Glenn Frey in the studio.
Take It Easy was really a song that was written by Jackson Browne, and he had that song three quarters finished. And the only line that I wrote in that song was, "It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford, slowing down to take a look at me." Just about everything else was written on that song. But I think Jackson was so appreciative of me filling in that one blank that he gave me half writer's credit. But in essence, although I did get, you know, writer's credit, that's a Jackson Browne song.
The sound of your own wheels drive you crazy. Lighten up while you still can. Don't even try to understand. Just find a place to make your stand. Take it easy. Sweet love. take it easy.
Take It Easy was the initial single from the Eagles in June 1972 and featured former Flying Burrito brother Bernie Ledden on guitar and banjo, Randy Meisner, ex-Poco, on bass and harmonies, Don Henley, drums and harmonies, and Take It Easy co-writer Glenn Frey on lead vocal.
Of course, Take It Easy is the first song anybody ever heard by the Eagles. It was the first image anybody ever had of us. And it was an interesting piece of material because in itself, it embodied a lot of what the band was about and was to become. The message was self-reliance, self-exploration, adventure, you know, the wide open spaces of the Southwest. You know, there were a lot of things in that song that were everything. That's the quintessential Eagles song.
Uncommonly savvy in spite of his lack of music business experience, Glenn Frey knew that his career needed professional management if he hoped to leave the nest.
Before the catchphrase country rock was really, you know, pounded into our minds, you know, we just liked all that, you know, we liked all that music. And all those groups were a big influence on us, plus the Beach Boys, I would include in that, and the Everly Brothers and some other people. But I think those were all vocal and musical stylings that we could relate to. And, you know, I think in a lot of ways we emulated those groups. Don and I were hanging around the Troubadour in Los Angeles at the time, Don just coming out from Texas with his band Shiloh and me just coming, you know, from Detroit. And then I was working with J.D. Souther at the time. And, you know, we saw a lot of those bands at the Troubadour. And I think in particular, Poco and the Flying Burrito Brothers were influences on us because they were right there at the Troubadour. We got to see them play live and watch what they were doing and check out the harmonies and check out the songs that they were writing or the songs that they were doing. So they were big, this big influence.
Every night, and I've been meaning to tell.
new, so long and dark and real.
Fry's Chug All Night contributed to the Eagles' testosterone level on their debut in June 1972. Next, Fry is joined by original Eagle Randy Meisner to reveal how singer Linda Ronstadt figured prominently in hatching the Eagles. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and get additional Eagles interviews at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, listening to Glenn Fry and Randy Meisner in the studio on the anniversary of the Eagles.
Hi, this is Randy Meisner.
And I'm Glenn Fry, in the studio for the 1972 debut album from the Eagles.
And I'm Redbeard. Southern California singer Linda Ronstadt had parlayed a hit single fronting the band The Stone Ponies into a solo opportunity. And step one for Ronstadt was assembling a backing band. Fresh off the bus from Detroit, Glenn Fry needed a gig.
We used to read the album credits on records that we liked with the sort of fervor or appetite that an etymologist must have looked at the Dead Sea Scrolls. You know, I mean, we looked in every nook and cranny for hints about who played what, where it was recorded, who was the producer, who was the manager, what label was it on, you know, just trying to, assimilate all this information. And when we saw the Joni Mitchell's album, and when we saw Ladies of the Canyon and Blue and the Neil Young album after the Gold Rush and the first Crosby, Stills, and Nash album, we kept seeing this management by David Geffen and Elliot Roberts. And, you know, we would say, man, we got to get with those guys because they know, you know, they're representing all the people whose music we admire. We want to be with them. And as it turned out, Jackson Brown was the first of our small group of struggling musician friends who got to David Geffen. And Jackson's literally, you know, came back and said, I've met him. You know, now just kind of hold tight here. I got to get my thing in place. But as soon as I get a chance, I'm going to tell him about you and JD, Glenn. And sure enough, Jackson Brown arranged for JD and I to meet David Geffen. JD wanted to make a solo album at that time, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do. But David Geffen, in his infinite wisdom, suggested that I get in a band, and I said, okay, I will. I got hired by Linda Ronstadt in May of 1971. We were looking for a drummer. I had been introduced to Don Henley because his band Shiloh and JD and I, who were Long Branch Penny Whistle, brilliant name, huh? We were both on a now-defunct record label called Amos Records. So I had met Don, and I had seen his band Shiloh play at Hoot Night, and I knew that he sang. So looking for a drummer to go with Linda on the road, we got Don Henley. So Henley and I went on the road with Linda in May of 71 as her drummer and rhythm guitar player and roomed together. And it was there where we started to hatch our plan to put together a country rock band. Originally, Linda and her then manager, producer John Boylan, had this idea of putting together a super country rock band to back up Linda. And we said, you know, I know that sounds like a good idea, but we want to have our own band. And Linda was nice enough, I guess where other people might have been miffed, you know, and said, I mean, I just put you to work. What are you talking about? Linda understood completely. and actually helped us get Randy Meisner from Poco and Bernie Ledden from the Burrito Brothers to come and sit in with Linda and her backup band, which had Henley and I in it, so that we could talk to these guys about starting a band. So Linda really helped get the Eagles together by bringing these other musicians into her band for a weekend at a time so that we could meet them, play with them, and pitch them on the idea of putting together another band.
I like the way your sparkling earrings lay against your skin so brown. And I wanna sleep with you in the desert tonight with a billion stars all around. 'Cause I got a peaceful, easy feeling, and I know you won't let me down. 'Cause I'm already standing on the ground. Found out a long time ago what a woman can do to your soul. Oh, but she can't take you anyway. You don't already know how to go. And I got a peaceful, easy feeling, and I know you won't let me down. 'Cause I'm already standing on the ground.
Big hit from the Eagles' June 1972 debut album was the unabashedly country rock song Peaceful Easy Feeling, and it was sung by Glenn Frey, but written by a bird of a different feather, Jack Temchin. Here's Glenn Frey in the studio.
Peaceful Easy Feeling showed up in my mailbox one day. I had met Jack in the early 70s when JD and I played at a folk club in San Diego called the Candy Company, and Temption became a friend, and Temption mailed me a demo of Peaceful Easy Feeling, and it came in my mailbox, and I went to the mailbox and pulled it out and put it on my cassette and said, oh, now here's a song we should record. Here's a song I can sing. So we did Peaceful Easy Feeling, and you know, that to date too is one of the classic Eagles songs. A lot of people remember the line, I want to sleep with you in the desert tonight with a million stars all around. Very much Eagles fare. The biggest influence on me was Bob Seger. Bob was a couple of years older than me, and the band I was in got to work a club circuit that was run by Bob's manager, Punch Andrews, who is still Bob's manager. And for some reason, Bob took a liking to me and took me under his wing. Took me to the studio when he was recording Ramblin' Gamblin' Man. Let me play acoustic guitar and sing background on it, you know, so I could sort of see how records were made. Seeger was the person who told me that I had to start writing my own songs if I was going to get anywhere in the music business. Seeger was a person who, I remember one night driving around on Woodward Avenue and listening to the radio in the car, and like something like the Cow Sills came on. You know, and I reached toward the knob and said, oh, let's turn that crap off. And Bob said, no, wait, they're on the radio and we're not. Let's listen and find out why.
Original Eagles bass player Randy Meisner remembers those early rehearsals.
So we started rehearsing and writing some songs, and we'd rehearse out at Bernie's and at Don and Glenn's and just kept rehearsing. And eventually they booked us up in Aspen to play a club up there. And so we played up there a lot of songs. We were doing cover like blues songs and just any songs that we had. And at that point, like I remember we did Witchy Woman and Jackson Brown helped a lot with a lot of the songs, like Take It Easy, we were doing that. And another funny thing, we played in Boulder, I think it was after this or something. It was like during exams week. And I always, at the time, I'd record all the rehearsals. I had a little Sony stereo when they first came out. So I had a lot of old tapes. But we played at Tulagi's when there was like three people there. And what I did, that at the time Bangladesh was out, and so I recorded, made a loop of the applause on Bangladesh and put it in back of this thing, because the recordings were good because it was so quiet in there, you know, there were no people. And so I did this shh, you know, like it's this huge audience, and it sounded just like it. It was really, you know. And then things Glenn said, it was a great line at the end of the last night we played there. He said, we'd like to thank the waitresses all the way down to the management for having us here.
Open up your eyes, take the devil from your mind. He's been holding on to you, and you're so hard to find. The wind outside is cold, restless feeling in my soul. A man can go. Take the devil. your
Original Eagles bass player Randy Meisner sang his composition Take the Devil on their 1972 debut. The Eagles had extremely high-flying hopes when they invited veteran British producer Glyn Johns to produce their initial album, but Glyn Johns was not impressed with what the Eagles had hatched. Glenn Frey in the studio.
One of the funny things about all this is Don and I wanted to get a little tougher sound on our records than Poco and the Burritos had achieved on their first couple albums, and we thought Glyn Johns was the logical choice, English hard rock and roll producer, you know, somebody who'd done the Stones. But it turned out Glyn Johns was burned out on hard rock and roll, was tired of waiting for Keith or the guys in the Faces to get buzzed and get their tracks together and do these things, and he was actually more of a folky than a hard rock guy. And what he liked about the Eagles was the banjo, the mandolin, the acoustic guitar, and the vocals. So it was kind of a, you know, we thought we were looking in the right place, but in essence, we found a guy, you know. And Glyn used to say to us, you know, you guys can't rock and roll. You know, the Stones rock and roll. You know, you guys are a bloody singing group and you do it bloody damn well. And you ought to just do it, you know. And you know, that was sort of his approach.
Thank you. been sleeping in the devil's bed. And there's some rumors going around, someone's underground. She can lock you in the night until your skin turns red.
Punching up the latter half of the term country rock, Don Henley's Witchy Woman was a top 20 hit from the Eagles' June 1972 debut. Still to come, Meisner and Glenn Frey return with some surprisingly candid assessments of the Eagles' initial flight. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and check out additional Eagles interviews at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for the Eagles.
Hi, this is Randy Meisner.
And I'm Glenn Frey, in the studio for the 1972 debut album from the Eagles.
You know, when I hear that voice, it's hard to remember that now Glenn Frey is wearing a new set of wings. With two top 10 hits and a top 20 on the debut, the anticipation was quite high for the Eagles' 1973 follow-up album, which was called Desperado. It was a no-brainer to record once again with veteran record producer Glyn Johns in his native London, England studio, according to Eagles singer-songwriter Glenn Frey.
As it turns out, Glyn was a little bit tired of spending a lot of time in the studio because bands like the Stones, bands like the Faces and the Who had already gotten into taking a long time to do their records. And I think his patience had been exhausted by those groups. So when he got with us, he was sort of like a schoolmarm, you know, kind of tap the ruler on his desk and say, okay, lads, we're going to begin right now. And he really sort of whipped us through our first two records. There wasn't too much time to stop and debate whether the vocal was good enough, whether a lead guitar part should be done again, whether we should punch in and fix things like that. He was sort of the arbiter of all the taste. This was good enough. We're moving on to the next thing. I agonized with that relationship at the time because we wanted everything to be so correct. And on the other hand, it was probably good that he sort of drove us through our records quickly, because as novices, we could have probably got sidetracked into areas that we didn't know a lot about and spent a lot of time working on things that weren't important. It's you know, it's debatable what was the best approach. But the first Eagles album was done in 3 weeks for $17,500. And although the records were good, you know, Henley and I had always felt like we wanted to spend more time on them. That, you know, that this was all going by too fast for us.
Nevertheless, when Eagles singer, bass guitarist Randy Meisner looks back with his former bandmates at those days before the Eagles would later soar to perch at the peak of American popularity, Meisner recalls the struggle quite fondly.
Well, I think to me it was positive because that was what we were there for. It was like work, whereas opposed to us being in California, I don't think we would have gotten the album done as quickly. Also, you know, because there was a budget, and I think this was the smartest way to do it because there was nothing else. Because we didn't have that much money and didn't know London, and so our main purpose to go there was to finish this album and to get it done in a certain amount of time. Whereas if we were in California, well, maybe let's not go in today. Let's do this. There wasn't any time schedule. Glenn would have been there. And it wouldn't have cost that much to say, well, you can stay another week, which he wouldn't have done anyway. but just because there was no distractions. It was like we were talking about a little bit about the Eagles, but we somehow got into it. And he says, you know, Randy, I don't think we even knew how great it was. And I thought about that, and I said, you're exactly right. You know, we were too young to even know how good it was. Or, you know, just inexperienced. It just all happened.
Thank you.
Fine Little Country Rockin' Song Tryin' features a song written and sung by Randy Meisner and tasty electric lead guitar from Bernie Ledden. Before passing away in January 2016, Glenn Frey, co-founder and chief architect of the Eagles, shared this with me in the studio.
You know, the first Eagles album is very inconsistent as far as the material goes, although it did have three excellent, you know, top 20 singles in it. I really do think that, you know, we were searching in our first album. We didn't really know what we were doing. It wasn't until Desperado that we started to think more about our writing, started to think more about the production, decided to do a concept album as sort of a reaction to our initial success, had sort of set us on an introspective course. And I believe that being associated with David Geffen meant that we were all of a sudden affiliating ourselves with the artists at his management company, who were Joni Mitchell, Crosby, Stills, Nash, Neil by himself, Jackson Brown. And Don and I sort of looked at each other and said, you know, if we're going to stick around with this company, and if we want to be here, we better start writing our butts off. We better start really working on this songwriting and make sure that we're doing good songs.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one, but I know that you got your reasons. These things that are pleasing you can hurt you somehow. Don't you draw the queen of diamonds, boy. She'll beat you if she's able. You know the queen of hearts is always your best bet. Now it seems to me some fine things have been laid upon your table, but you only want the ones that you can't get. Desperado, oh, you ain't getting no younger. Your pain and your hunger, they're driving you home. And freedom, oh, freedom, well, that's just some people talking. Your prison is one world all alone. Don't your feet get cold in the wintertime? The sky won't snow and the sun won't shine. It's hard to tell the nighttime from the day. It may be raining, but there's a rainbow above you. You better let somebody love you.
Let somebody love you.
You better let somebody love you before it's too.
Don Henley's brilliant title song, Desperado, from the Eagles' 1973 second album. I'm Redbeard. We'll be back in the studio after this. This is Red Beard in the studio, thanking Randy Meisner and God rest the soul of Glenn Frey. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Red Beard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2017, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet, theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.